Welcome to Talking Allergies, the podcast where we talk all things allergies about all types of allergies in all kinds of allergy lives.
From food allergies to environmental allergies, special guests, community stories, allergy and science giveaways, and more.
This is your allergy podcast for all things allergies. Hi, Melrick.
Hi, Grace, and welcome to another episode of Talking Allergies. On this episode, we're going to be talking about OAS or PFS or PFAS or PAS. And we have a special guest on who talks about their own allergies, including OAS, and also about managing asthma.
So, Melrick, before we get started with this episode, you've just said a whole lot of acronyms. Can you tell me what they are?
Of course, Grace. So OAS is oral allergy syndrome. PFS is pollen food syndrome, PAS is pollen allergy syndrome, and PFAS is pollen food allergy syndrome.
That's four syndromes. Are they actually connected?
They are all connected, and these terminologies and acronyms are used all around the world to describe what is a syndrome that occurs in people that consume foods that contain pollen proteins found in pollens such as, but not limited to, birch pollen, alder pollen, grass pollen, ragweed pollen, or mugwort pollen. Now, I do feel like I'm about to enter a potions class in Harry Potter, but those are the different pollens. And these pollens are found in many common fruits and vegetables, as well as some spices, tree nuts, and legumes.
That's right. They can be found in apples, apricots, avocados, bananas, melons, mangoes. The list goes on.
There's also like pineapples, almonds, peanuts, soybeans, prunes, there's a few others on there. Definitely a big list of fruits and vegetables that have pollen in them.
Sounds like you know a lot, Melrick. Do you actually have OAS?
I do, Grace. I do have oral allergy syndrome, OAS as I refer to it. And this is where my lips tingle, they swell as well, and my throat gets itchy. My eyes get itchy as well. I get some tingling in my ears sometimes, and then I also get hives around my mouth on occasion and around my chin and jawline. So, and that comes from some of those fruits and vegetables that you mentioned before, and as so did I.
So what do you get OAS from?
Melons, so like watermelon, mashmelon, rock melon, almonds. I get it from mangoes, bananas, kiwi fruit's a big one. Really any tropical fruits sort of do it for me, but then of course some tree nuts and legumes, not all of them, but almonds and peanuts are probably the big two that sort of have a reaction with. I don't get anaphylaxis symptoms, but I know that some people do with OAS, but it is probably not as spoken about allergy out there, but definitely, you know, there's a sort of overlap with that pollen allergy group and the food allergy group because of that connection to the fruits and vegetables and tree nuts and legumes.
So pollen gets talked about a lot in pollen season. Do you get this reaction just in pollen season?
No, I don't. And I think, you know, it's a really important one to talk about anyway, because if people throughout the year that have pollen allergies and they may overlap into this food allergy group and they may have these reactions. So it can occur at any point of the year. You know, you're still getting imported fruits and you're still growing fruits, and those pollens that are heavier during pollen season that may cause an environmental allergic reaction throughout the year will cause a food-related allergic reaction because you're consuming foods that have pollen proteins in them. And that's my experience with it.
So does everyone with a pollen allergy have OAS?
I don't think you necessarily have to have OAS if you've got a pollen allergy. But I think with any allergies, you know, you speak to your healthcare practitioner, a qualified healthcare practitioner, to understand what reactions you're having, understand what's causing those reactions. Of course, you yourself may know that from having a reaction. So I said anybody out there that is sort of thinking about, hey, you know, I've got a pollen allergy and I've had a reaction to this fruit or vegetable, that you may have some of the symptoms of OAS. So, you know, just get it checked out, go and speak to your doctor and find out what's actually going on. But certainly in my experience, I have pollen allergies and I have OAS too. So yeah.
I have also pollen allergies with asthma reactions, but I don't have OAS. So that's really interesting to know.
Yeah, that is, yes. I mean, I also have sometimes got asthma as a reaction when I've had too much of the protein in there. And during pollen season, of course, you know, it's like a whole double, you're going to deal with two sides of it. But you can avoid it in all circumstances, but there's ways to manage it. And I think, you know, you've got to find out what works for you. But definitely having your medication on hand. So if you are having asthma symptoms, carry your asthma inhalers and so forth. If you're having allergy symptoms, and in my case, you know, things like antihistamines are really helpful. So whatever you use to manage those symptoms, make sure you have it on you, but also take it when you're having those reactions.
So talking about management, how do you deal or manage OAS, Melrick?
Well, apart from complete avoidance, which is always a good sort of strategy, sometimes I think the biggest thing for me is to just know that, be aware that there could be a reaction. So you may not be able to always avoid it. I have my medication on me, but I do avoid it as much as possible. That's still my avoidance. I know some people also cook the fruits and vegetables, where it's able to, heat or cook out the protein so you don't have the reaction. That works sometimes for me. It doesn't work all the time. So for me, it's probably just avoidance, but also having some medication on hand to manage it.
It sounds like you're managing it and that you've got good day-to-day practices as well.
I do. You won't catch me eating the fruit cake or the wedding cake at a wedding, so, or jumping in the fruit salad bowl anytime soon. But look, there's a lot of alternatives. Like, I like the taste of certain fruits, so I just use like fruit flavoring sachets and get around that.
With OAS, does it ever get minimized?
It can be. I think with all allergies, you know, minimization can happen through it, depending where you are, who you're speaking to, how you are approaching the situation. Sometimes that minimization can also come with the way you communicate it. So you may not want to be an inconvenience to a situation or to a person. So you might not maybe raise the seriousness or advocate as much as you can for it. Maybe you may think your symptoms aren't that serious. So you go, okay, maybe I shouldn't advocate it for it. But I think the most important thing is to just support yourself by talking about it. And if you're unable to talk about it, find someone that could maybe speak up on your behalf. But definitely take it seriously. You know, allergies can have impacts on other parts of our life that are not just with those symptoms, but also comes down to the things we do, the places we go to and so forth. All allergies matter. So it's important we take them seriously and we support people with it.
That's a fantastic message, Melrick. All allergies matter and all reactions matter as well.
Yes, and it's really great that we brought up asthma as well, Grace, during this conversation, because asthma is a reaction that people get, especially with environmental pollen sort of allergies, which can cause some reactions related to the breathing and so forth. And if you've got asthma, that can aggravate it. And you have, like any allergies, you've got to carry your medication with you to manage it. I know in the interview today that we've got in this episode, we are going to hear a little bit about it. But it's great that we're talking about it, because there are a lot of different symptoms when it comes to allergies that we all have to be aware of to support each other through it.
Thank you, Melrick. That leads perfectly into my interview with Iffy, who actually has OAS, food allergies, and asthma, and talks through living with allergies as an adult.
I was very interested in this interview, Grace, as I can relate to a lot of similarities with the story that Iffy is sharing. But I feel like I've already said too much, but I look forward to this interview.
Yeah, Iffy is absolutely lovely. And as an adult living with allergies, I think she's got some really great insights to be able to share.
All right, Grace, well, let's tune right in.
Hi, Iffy, and welcome to Talking Allergies. Thank you for being with us.
Thanks so much, Grace, for having me. I'm really excited to be here.
So, Iffy, could you tell me a little bit about your allergy story?
Yeah, sure. So my allergy story started when I was 2 years old. So when I was two, Mum says that she was about to go out to a friend's place or some sort of outing, and just being sort of in a rush, she fed me egg. And I think that was the first time that I'd been exposed to, you know, maybe cooked egg as a standalone, and said that I had vomited and I broke out in some sort of hives. And they took me to the doctor and sort of said, you know, maybe she has an egg allergy. But for me, being two, I've always just known myself as having an egg allergy. Just something to avoid. So that's been my journey, from very young, having egg allergy. I did also have asthma from childhood, but it wasn't really something that bothered me as such. You know, it was more as an adult, as that evolved, that it's been a bit more, at times, sometimes tricky for me to manage certain times of the year. And then I also have, because of the asthma, I have hay fever, pollen allergies. So because of that, I also during springtime sort of struggle with that, but also I have oral allergy syndrome as well, so it's related to the pollen allergies. And then eczema as well, which has gotten a little bit more better since moving to Melbourne. So when I was living interstate in a more colder environment, I did struggle with that. So a whole range of different allergies.
Have your allergies evolved over time from when you first found out to now?
Yeah, definitely. I think my egg allergy probably pretty consistent. I don't think it's maybe not too much. Like maybe I have a little bit of asthma, very small amount, but it's not enough, I would say, to probably be considered as anaphylactic. I've been able to just manage with, you know, antihistamines at this point in time. So that hasn't progressed too much necessarily. I think what's progressed for me mostly has been my asthma. So that's become a bit more of an issue for me in springtime. So I'm now on immunotherapy just to reduce my response to, you know, the pollen allergies. And what's sort of changed a bit more is my oral allergy syndrome. So before I could a bit more comfortably eat certain fruits and vegetables raw. There's always some things I've always been a bit, you know, I get a bit of symptoms, like strawberries and berries, my favorite fruits. I used to be able to have them, you know, fresh. But now I just find that I have to heat treat them. So just chuck them in the microwave when I'm making my porridge and have everything cooked, because I just find that they give me just some, you know, itchy sort of throat. It's not anaphylactic. It's just more around my mouth, which is standard sort of oral allergy symptoms. So definitely more my pollen and asthma has sort of evolved, I think, more than anything.
With your oral allergy syndrome, how did you find that out?
Yes, that's a really good question. So I just noted when I'd eat certain foods, like salad was fine, but things like carrot, I'd eat it and, you know, and I just find I'd get a bit itchy and I'm like, this is really interesting. And so I noticed with certain foods, I just found myself a little bit itchy in the throat, but it wouldn't progress that much. And also watermelon. And so I know this sounds really bad and I'm not in any way promoting this, but I just did my own little research and noted that there were other people out there that said that, you know, when they ate that fruit or vegetable fresh, they had symptoms. But then when I'd eat like, you know, sauces that, you know, the carrot had been cooked in, I wouldn't have any issue. And so when I went to the allergist, you know, quite a few years later, they sort of confirmed the same, that, yeah, it was likely to be oral allergy syndrome. And it's something that probably was more obvious to me as an adult. It wasn't something that I'd experienced really maybe when I was younger, and maybe subtly over the years just got a bit worse with to the extent now that it's everything has to be really cooked, I think, for me.
As an adult with allergies, how do you manage your day-to-day life?
Yeah, so yeah, that's a really, again, really good question. So I live alone. And so I do, you know, have to be on top of my medication. So that means making sure I take my Preventer medications, have my the Ventolin as well. So if there's any, you know, flare-ups of my asthma, making sure I take my immunotherapy as well, having antihistamines, and also my EpiPens just in case. So it's a lot of like medication management and making sure I'm taking them, you know, my medications in the morning and night. But also being aware of your own symptoms as well. So, you know, checking in with yourself, you know, making sure I'm seeing my GP regularly, specialist. It's also not just the medication aspect, but, you know, it's also even shopping, you know, at that level, making, you know, obviously very common to be with allergies, you know, making sure all the label reading and all that takes time, and, you know, obviously cooking for myself and things like that. I think the social aspect is a bit that I find a bit challenging. So, you know, which is, you know, going out for food and things like that. I think something I used to historically really enjoy, but now this is just an area that I have to sort of, I guess, sort of maybe expose myself a little bit more again, just to feel a bit more comfortable. So I think as an adult, what I guess changes is that you have to sort of manage things for yourself around medication, seeing GP specialists, you know, and, you know, obviously food label reading, being aware of your own body, of, you know, your symptoms and things like that. And then managing more challenging situations around whether it's travel or eating out, workplaces and those sorts of things. So it's quite a lot to manage sometimes on your own, and some days are better than others, I find. And some seasons for me, like, you know, spring is a bit more of a tricky season for me than maybe other times of the year.
Thank you so much for sharing. And it does definitely have an impact on socialization and feeling like you can actually go out with all of your medications and all of your precautions taken too.
Yeah, that's right. And I think sometimes when you have, you know, one incident that maybe I think in my case that particular incident that was a bit difficult for me was maybe the people around me probably didn't respond in the way that maybe was as supportive. I did have one person that was so supportive, but I'm not blaming them. I think they were in shock, and sometimes I do appreciate when people are in shock. They're, you know, they're not always their best selves because they're under stress as well, you know, seeing their colleague, you know, distressed. And so ever since then, I found it a bit difficult because I have this fear in the back of my mind that if I have an incident, are people going to be there for me, or are they going to talk about me? You know, even though I know people won't do that, I think that's what sometimes stops me is maybe this fear of not having control over my situation. So, that's, I guess, a bit of a struggle for me in terms of eating out. I still go out, I still socialise, but I really prefer to go to places that I know the menu a bit more, which is fine. And maybe for me, it's about going there, building up my experience again and comfortability, and then I feel more comfortable trying new places.
It's definitely a topic of discussion, saying, are you okay with this place, or does this place make you feel okay? It's so lovely when someone does actually care.
Yeah, that's right. And I found some of my friends are really good about it now, where they're like, look, if we want to go out and actually have a meal, how about you choose the place that you feel comfortable with as well, which is really helpful. And I don't want to always take over. I'm always mindful of, you know, it's a hard one because I do understand people with allergies have unique needs, and, you know, it is important that the places suit them. But I'm always mindful that I don't want to make things about me. You know, it's that fine line, you know. So, and maybe in that case is that maybe trying different non-food activities as well. Sometimes I just want to not think about that too much, and sometimes just doing things that are not related to food, like going for a walk and coffee. And because for me, that's not maybe so much of a risk, you know, going out and getting a coffee. So sometimes I like to do those things just so I can just not think too much about my allergies as such as well.
As an adult with allergies, how would you say that the impact has been on your life?
Yeah, so when I was younger, it's really interesting. So when I was younger, I had a number of, you know, reactions, just because, you know, you don't always know what's in food and things like that as well. And because I don't at this present time have a history of anaphylaxis, some of my reactions, I'm surprised how I managed them. I didn't even have medication on board because, you know, I'm probably now in my late 30s. I think the awareness probably of my family and all that time is probably different to now. So I was probably a bit more laissez-faire, very relaxed. And then I think in my early 20s, before that incident at one of my previous workplaces, I was pretty similar, like laissez-faire. I'm like, oh, you know, I'd still obviously ask if something's got egg. I'm not saying this is the approach to go by, but I was a bit more open to going to pretty much anywhere to eat. And then after that incident, I think I've been a little bit more cautious. So I think as an adult, I've had both, you know, really positive experiences. And also just, I think now where I'm at in my life, it can sometimes be another burden, to be perfectly honest, because you have to think about yeah, when you're shopping, what you're buying, you know, you see these new products and then you go have a look at it and then you go, I actually can't have that. Or, you know, you see on Facebook or social media, these new cafes are coming out. And sometimes those places may be a bit too risky because of, you know, a lot of their items may have egg or cross-contamination is a bit higher risk at this particular place. So there's a lot more you think about, you know, in terms of when you go out, you know, when you, if you want to go traveling. But also another area for me is I'm wanting to start to date again as well. So even, you know, the cross-contamination or, and explaining things to them as well, you know, that person that you have, you know, an allergy. So I think it's had a significant impact for me more recently just because it's been on my mind. Yeah, I think in terms of just sometimes how safe I feel in the world, I think, yeah.
Has the way that you manage allergies changed from when you were a child to as an adult?
Yep, definitely. When I was young, I didn't really carry like antihistamines. Every now and then I'd take them, but if I had a reaction, I'd just wait for it to pass through because I never had any breathing constriction. It was just more hives, vomiting. I think just TMI, once I'd vomited, I was fine, but it took hours. I'd get immediate reaction and then I'd have this really delayed, like, you know, wait. And so then, yeah, so for me, I would, yeah, I didn't necessarily take consistent medication. I didn't have puffers at that time. So whereas now, you know, I take, yeah, a lot more medications every day just to manage, especially now with my asthma. When I go out in spring, I have to look at the pollen count. You know, that requires a negotiation with work as well. When I'm doing exercise, most of the time I personally don't need to take Ventolin. It's only if I'm doing dancing that, you know, something a bit more vigorous, I have to. So they're sort of the things that I have to be mindful. Everything has to be cooked now, so that takes a bit more time for me to prepare meals. So it's just these things, I think, that it's more time and I think more thinking that, you know, the brain space of just coordinating my day-to-day in terms of, yeah, medication, cooking, prepping things, yeah, it just takes a bit more brain space and time.
Definitely. Has anyone helped you with your allergy life throughout the years?
Yeah, so my probably my mum was my biggest champion growing up and now as an adult as well. My dad probably definitely understood the egg allergies, but probably doesn't really understand my oral allergy syndrome as much. And my sisters have been really supportive as well in terms of my allergies, especially as an adult now that I'm in this space where I'm still just trying to figure out things. So they've been really supportive of me. And in particular, I think, you know, when we're having social gatherings and just even though they know I have an egg allergy, just still reinforcing that because sometimes they might buy new food products that they want to try out, just making sure, especially with baked goods, if they're making it, just making sure that it's hasn't got egg and things like that. But also when I'm having to stay at home a bit more over spring, you know, just that understanding as well. Yeah, so yeah, they've been really supportive and good friends have been really good. And it's also in some way, maybe some of the benefit, maybe if I have to look at the, maybe some of not saying benefits, maybe that's not the right word. Maybe one good thing that's come out of it is actually help me to know who is a good friend to me and not, because I think the people who understand, you want to be around them more, and the people who see you as a burden or don't take it seriously or think you're exaggerating, they're the kind of people I personally don't want to maybe don't want to be as close to or don't want to spend as much time with. I know this sounds a bit polarizing, but this is just my own personal experience anyway. Yeah,
it's definitely when someone makes you feel welcomed and cared for, it's definitely a sign of really, really lovely friendship and care too.
Yeah, that's right. And yeah, when they sort of check in on you and say, hey, I know you're, you know, your asthma hasn't been really good, you know, how are you going? Or, you know, I think my last reaction prior to this was maybe a number of years ago, but just having friends can go, look, are you okay? I can take you home. You know, those, you know, small things really yeah, make you feel seen and know that people really care about your well-being and your health. So yeah, it's really important to, I think, to be surrounded by friends, family, supportive workplaces as well.
It really makes a difference.
Yeah, that's right.
Is there something that you've learnt about living with allergies that you would like someone without allergies to know?
Yeah, I think what I would say is that sometimes allergies can be, it is in some ways an invisible condition, you know. Yes, I do appreciate, allergies, obviously there's a whole gamut of, what allergies is. And yes, there has been times where it's been visible when I've had an eczema flare up. And that has, been sometimes difficult in terms of, socialization when it's been really bad. You know, you feel very self-conscious. But then also at the same time, and I do appreciate a lot of people with allergies have a mix of different, not just eczema, they might also have asthma and food allergies. But then also, because I look outwardly in quotations healthy, sometimes people don't, realize the accommodations that you, even just to get to a place, all the medications that you take, for me anyway, even in asthma season, just to get by, all the things that you have to consider when you are going out and eating out. It's not as simple as just going there. Sometimes, it means calling up ahead of time, reviewing the menu, thinking about, is this a good place for you to go? Or do you want to suggest, something else? And sometimes, with some certain people, it may not feel as comfortable doing it, but I still encourage people to still do that and advocate for themselves. But one thing I think I've learned is the importance of advocacy, really advocating for yourself, having really supportive family, friends around you. And sometimes being okay to say no, like if you've looked into something really clearly, you go, look, this place is just not something I feel comfortable with, it's actually okay. It doesn't mean that you're saying no to eating out, that it just could be that particular place may not be something that you feel comfortable doing. So I think knowing when to say no, and also finding consumer organizations like Allergy Life that really have a lot of resources, but also support groups, so that consumers, people living with the conditions, or even carers, family members can come and chat about what it's like to live with allergies, whether it's as a teenager, for your children, or as an adult.
You've definitely touched on quite a lot of areas, and advocating for yourself is something that's really hard to do. Do you have any tips on how to advocate for yourself?
Maybe starting small, like I think maybe when you're, even just going out, maybe starting even in, especially when you're eating out, maybe those are like really good places to start around advocating for yourself. So checking the menu and making sure you're clear about that particular restaurant, their practices, all those sorts of things. I think that's a really good place to start. And then having those conversations with your, obviously with your, your friends, and what you need from them as well. I think just starting more nuclear in that space. And then I think once you build confidence, then you might feel more comfortable talking to, places like your workplaces, if you're going out the dates, all those sort of things. I think starting with your friends, family, eating out can be a good place to start, and then going from there. I think also seeking advice from advocacy organisations, they have really good tips and resources. So, Allergy Life, other allergy organisations, speaking to them about how you would approach, advocating for yourself can be really important. That can be a nice way of, expanding your tools and way of, advocating for yourself.
Thank you. Is there anything that you've been proud of despite of having allergies?
Yeah, I think traveling. I haven't done that as much more recently. I think just sort of, the pandemic just a few years ago. But I think the last time I went overseas was probably before I was having some of these personal sort of struggles. And even though I didn't have I think from memory, I didn't have an allergic reaction, but I really was really present. And a lot of the issues that I had on the trip were nothing to do with allergies. I was able to eat a lot of the foods there and really just obviously ask, and even with the language barriers was able to sort of get by and just stuck with really more sort of simple sort of dishes. So I did go to Sri Lanka and Maldives, and I tended to just have more plain, you know, curry and rice. I was able to enjoy, and a lot of things that the things that came out on the trip was more the dramas with friends. It wasn't actually the allergies. So that was good, and it's nice to sort of look back and remember that, you know, when I've had hard times, that, you know, I've still been able to live a full life. Yes, sometimes the allergies may, you know, some days it feels like it gets in the way, but then some days it doesn't. And in some ways, you know, it's added a bit more meaning to my life as well, because, you know, I have a bit more understanding of what it can be like for people with chronic conditions as well. So I think in some ways it has also helped me to connect with other people maybe that I may not have met in my life if I didn't have allergies.
Is there anything that you would tell your younger self?
Yeah, I think I would tell my younger self to continue to try different things. I think, to continue to be brave, try different things. And I wish I would have sought specialist advice a little bit more earlier in my life. I think it was until maybe my 20s, but I wish I had a bit more of a team involved a bit more earlier. I think that would have been really helpful for me. But that would be the main thing, is just to go out there, you know, be cautious still, of course, you know, follow the recommendations as per your GP or specialist. But at the same time, you know, also try new things as well, and still have fun in your life. And if you are, you know, having struggles, you know, seeing mental health experts that have expertise in allergies, and really, again, that message, around seeking relevant consumer organisations is really important to advocate and support you in your journey.
If there's an adult out there at the moment struggling with allergies, is there anything that you would tell them?
I would tell them that, that the challenges for adults, just like children and teenagers, are unique as well, because obviously when you are an adult, you know, sometimes you might be living by yourself, or sometimes you might be living in share homes, and, you know, they're all unique circumstances. But also sometimes you interact with workplaces or universities. You know, you might be going out a little bit more, and you're making a lot of the time decisions yourself. So I think as an adult, again, that message of advocacy is really important. I think that's probably the common thread through. So just, I think, just knowing yourself, advocating for yourself, being aware really of, you know, how to manage, you know, your allergies that you're living with, I think would be the main thing for me. Is, I think I wish I knew how to advocate for myself when I was younger in the way that I do know now. So that's probably my main message. And really seeking out, support services for adults as well. Because again, I do feel like there is a little bit of a gap, I think a month ago I was on just a Facebook support group for allergies. It's a worldwide one. And someone was saying, I would love to have a support group so I could chat to people. So I think there is a little bit of a gap in terms of maybe a lot of adults. This isn't maybe an assumption, but it feels like we're all kind of doing it alone. So, finding other people that have that lived experience, I think, can be really helpful.
Thank you so much for sharing. Is there anything that you would like to share around your allergy story, or tips or tricks? Anything else that you would like to share?
I think for me, there's probably no other tips or tricks. I think maybe the key point is just, if you notice things changing as you become an adult, you know, I do, even in my story, you know, certain allergies, sort of maybe the egg allergy at this point in time, to my knowledge, hasn't maybe shifted as much. But for me, it's been other things that have changed. So just noticing, like, if your allergies are changing as you come into adulthood, really just making sure that you are seeing your GP or specialist or your team. So just always having those regular checkups and just noticing if things are changing for you. because yeah, you might need your medication or treatment to be reviewed. I think that's probably the main thing that I've the main tip or main thing that I've noticed in my own personal experience.
Thank you so much for sharing your allergy story and tips with other adults living with allergies so much, Iffy.
Oh, no worries. And thanks so much, Grace, for letting me on your podcast and letting me also share my story. Hopefully this is something that can help other people living with allergies, in particular adults, just because, you know, this is the stage I'm at in my life as well. So hopefully it is helpful to other people out there.
Thank you so much, Iffy.
Thank you for your amazing interview, Iffy. Relate to a lot of what you've shared. I think it's a great story to listen to for any adults that have allergies themselves, because, you know, there are so many different challenges with, I think, workplaces, dating, you know, just navigating life as an adult with allergies, because it's so different to when you're at home with mum and dad. And especially if you find out you have allergies as an adult, you may discover that later in life, and understanding those experiences, but also, you know, how you approach them from stories like this, it's super helpful.
I was so happy that Iffy shared her story about living with allergies as an adult and the different aspects. She's got some really great insights.
Yeah, and if you or someone you know is suspected of having oral allergy syndrome, other food allergies, pollen allergies, or an allergy in general, it's important to discuss diagnosis and treatment with a qualified healthcare provider to understand how to manage individual symptoms, but also to set up an action plan in the case of a reaction, just to help you and support you. And outside of that as well, if you wanted to talk to people about your allergies, there are a lot of resources out there. There are support groups, organizations that are here to support you. You're not alone in your allergy journey.
Definitely not alone. Thank you so much for listening to this episode about OAS and pollen allergies.
Thank you. And we'll be back with another Talking Allergies episode soon. So stay tuned.
On Talking Allergies?
On Talking Allergies. The discussions on Talking Allergies are here to support you or your loved one on your journey with allergies. The topics discussed here are not intended as medical instruction or as a substitute for advice by a qualified healthcare provider.